Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH, streaming on all those smart speakers like Amazon Echo and Google Home. A woman said she complained about the homeless industrial complex and then found herself out of a job. That is what's trending.
What's trending? Snohomish County.
Well, this is in Tacoma, so that's wrong. Should we do that again?
Yeah, you have something else on the sheet here at this slot.
No, I don't. Unless you pulled the old one. Uh-oh, he's in trouble. He's now just realizing he did something that I told him never to do, which is print out the show sheet like 4 hours before the show goes on.
It was like 20 minutes early.
Because sometimes I move things around. And then it just also occurred to him that I now realize he wasn't even paying attention to my lead-in.
I was paying attention to the lead-in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. But I didn't really.
You want to do that again?
Yeah, we can try it
again. Wait, hold on. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Tacoma?
A woman said that she complained about the homeless industrial complex. And by that, I mean the organization that she worked with, worked for, was one of those organizations that seems to be involved in pretty much everything having to do with homelessness and yet doesn't have a lot of successes. It's weird how that works. They continue to fail and yet somehow they get more responsibilities and, of course, bigger budgets. Anita Latassi spoke with the Tacoma News Tribune. And while there's a lot of good information in this story, it is the most poorly written investigative report I think I've ever seen. So when you get to page 40, you finally learn that Anita complained about the conditions at a homeless hotel in Tacoma managed by the Low-Income Housing Institute, Lehigh. She said it was appalling. It was full of illegal behavior, which, by the way, I have previously reported about sites managed by Lehigh. Now, she tells the Tacoma News Tribune that she and two other staffers ended up getting hospitalized for exposure to toxic fumes. What was the toxic fume? Where did that come from? Well, she says it came from a resident who was cooking over-the-counter medications in their room. She said it was clear that people in this homeless hotel were using drugs, and it was just making them sick having to smell all of that. And if you're saying to yourself, this is someone who lost her job, she is just complaining because she wants a payday. Well, TNT spoke with a few folks who basically said the exact same thing, who aren't suing, who aren't involved. They spoke with a former resident who said, yep, that's exactly what happened here. She said she felt nauseous all the time due to what she said was drug use that was happening. So Latassi, Anita Latassi, said she asked for help. She reached out to their leadership, say, hey, we need protective equipment. We need to have some meetings about safety. We need security. But she said they were all unfulfilled. Now, another employee, her name is Maya Barrett. She said she worked by herself overnight for 3 months. Lehigh said, oh, no, that's rare. You rarely see anyone working alone. She worked alone, she said, for 3 months in the overnight shift. And she said she was scared she was going to get hurt by some of these people in the homeless hotel. They write, Barrett said she went to the Tacoma Needle Exchange herself to pick up Sharps containers and Narcan to store in the building. Up until she left on March 15th, Barrett said, she was not aware of stick-proof gloves, eye protection, hazmat gear, or respiratory gear that were available to staff, despite sometimes cleaning up rooms with blood, feces, drug paraphernalia, and other bodily fluids. Now, of course, Lehigh says, all of this is nonsense, not true. In the December letter to Human Resources that Latassi wrote, Tacoma News Tribune said, she said, quote, since September 15th, staff had found over 55 needles, 25 switchblades, a machete, a sword, 50 meth pipes, bags of crystal meth, bags of marijuana, baggies of cocaine. Oh, this is going on forever. Alcohol, round pills of many kinds, still fentanyl, bongs, and other drug paraphernalia while conducting bag checks on residents. I mean, who among us? I've got a bag. You reach in. I'm not going to guarantee you're not going to find at least one of those things.
It's just Pez.
It's just Pez. It's not rainbow fentanyl. They say Latassi said in the letter she was told by her supervisor to put confiscated drugs down the drain or in the trash. I think that's you're not supposed to do that because every time I go to a pharmacy, they have a little sign that says that they can collect unused drugs, and you're not supposed to put them in the in like flush them down a drain or something because then the fish get high.
Isn't that what you want?
You know, that's a fair point. On March 15th, Barrett told the News Tribune she often left confiscated drugs in a plastic bag on her supervisor's desk with a sticky note that had the resident's room number on it. So she ends up getting fired, she says, as a result of bringing this to their attention. Lehigh says she's not telling the truth. These are fabrications, but we can't talk about personnel issues. Okay. I'm going to side with the employee until I'm proven otherwise. In this case, I don't believe in innocent until proven guilty, personally. I'm not a court of law. But I can tell you that I have done a lot of research and have done a lot of reporting on Lehigh over the last several years. And I have visited their sites. There was one, it was either a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, where I went to the tiny home village. I believe it was the one in Othello. I think that's the name of the neighborhood. Because a father reached out to me and said that his adult son is a drug addict and ended up becoming homeless. They tried their best to help. He didn't want it. He ends up getting placement in one of the tiny home villages that Lehigh manages. And the father said he died there of a drug overdose / his little tiny home catching fire because of the drugs that he was using. So I went down and I visited. And it was a mess. There were people there who were very clearly under the influence. Very clear. In fact, there was one woman there who was calling 911, trying to get medics to show up because her boyfriend who lived there was, I think she said he was drunk and possibly high. The other thing I saw there, ton of stolen bikes. I mean, sure, it's possible that someone there is just a vintage bike collector. That's possible. Probably improbable, but it's possible. Everywhere. It was clearly a place that you would never want anyone you love to live. I've talked to people about the South Lake Union tiny home village and how drug use is very rampant there, or at least at the time was very rampant there. So I'm going to go and side with the worker. Because the one thing we definitely know is true is that while organizations like Lehigh have been running things as far as trying to tackle homelessness, they've had a very large footprint in everything that's been done. Has it gotten better or worse? It's gotten worse, homelessness. They are part of the homeless industrial complex, where the same people and the same organizations, because of their connections with the lawmakers who are making the decisions, they somehow get wealthier, they get bigger budgets, but without any results. And when you ask them for results, they don't tell you what they are. I've stopped asking Lehigh to give me any data because I asked them, well, how many people, once you give them a tiny home, how many times do you get people into permanent housing? Oh, I'll get back to you. A couple days go by. Nothing. Hey, you said you were going to give me some of the data. Where is it? No response. A couple days goes by. Hey, still waiting on the data. Oh, I got a response this time. An out-of-office reply. I'm going to be out of the office for the next 3 months on sabbatical. If you have any information, or if you have a need for any information, I'll get back to you in 3 months.
Isn't that the worst?
Because
you get
remarkable.
It right. You're excited. You think you're getting a reply to your question. Oh, they're really on top. No, it's that.
It's like, this is a rarity. I actually got a response within a few minutes. Oh, you're out of town. Got it. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Snohomish County.
There you go. That was good. Good on you. You paid attention.
Do you want to check the sheet? You want to check what's number one?
I have no doubt that the show sheet is the old version to which I updated at least 2 o'clock.
How much?
At least 2 o'clock.
No, check the version.
You go check.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah? What is it
say? And it's in the order, the Snohomish County stories first, Tacoma second.
Then you changed it.
I didn't change it.
You're a liar.
I
see right through you. I see right through you. That's why you're smiling in there. Or you're high.
No, I'm smiling because I'm right.
You're not right. First of all, who's always right?
Yeah, it's you.
Okay, who's never right?
Me.
Exactly. So, how could you be right?
It's fair.
It's just, it's an impossibility. So, Fox 13 has a story out. This is actually kind of terrifying. Imagine for a moment, you're at home, and you realize someone stole some stuff from you. In this case, it was a family in Mill Creek had a missing passport, a missing wallet, and $3,000 in cash. Now, Mill Creek is not known for a whole bunch of home break-ins, but there's crime in Snohomish County. And so they make a report. They call the cops. Cops show up. Fox says when they arrived, they found signs of someone living in the upstairs loft. The resident first noticed something was amiss when he began smelling cigarettes inside the home, but I guess didn't quite wonder enough where it was coming from to go upstairs and see what was up.
Well, is that your initial thought? If you smell cigarettes in your head, do you just, oh, yeah, somebody living in my attic.
There's one thing you definitely would do. This is, of course, and the presumption is, the implication of the way it's written, is that there's no smokers in the home. Otherwise, it wouldn't be of note. Just like, I smell smoke. Well, yeah, because your husband smokes or your wife smokes or whatever. So the implication here is no one smokes. So now you smell cigarette smoke, and it's clearly coming from inside the home. Presumably, you go to the person you live with and say, hey, honey, are you smoking cigarettes? And then he or she would turn to you and say, what? You know I don't smoke. What are you? What's wrong with you? You go, don't you smell that? And they go, and then they go look for where the smoke is coming from. That should happen.
Like you automatically assume someone edgy and cool is living in your attic?
I don't think anyone's living in the home, but I am wondering where it's coming from. And I have to assume that at one point, by going like this, it will take you to the spot in which the cigarette was being smoked and you would find said stranger.
Seems
that's
possible.
All I'm saying. So they ended up going into this sort of loft area of their home, and they call it a loft. It does sound like it's an attic. That's what it kind of sounds like. They removed a makeshift bed, drug paraphernalia, and half-eaten food, but they didn't find the dude. They didn't find him. So the officers, and I don't know how I feel about this, they said, hey, look, guys, the person responsible, probably going to return. If he does, let us know. Bye. And they just left. I know they can't stay there the whole time, but I don't know what they should have
done.
That
is kind of funny.
It is just like,
if
yeah,
it's not guy, you.
Dude's going to come back, so just FYI. Let us know. We'll be around. And he did, in fact, come back. It was a 24-year-old guy. He came back, and they called the cops, and then they arrested him. They say police were again called on Tuesday to the home, which had been locked from the inside. Officers say they found 24-year-old Daniel Tomiaga inside of the home, along with all the items he allegedly stole. Oh, but also, this is called added value. They also found on him, they say, meth, 11 fentanyl pills. Meth and 11 fentanyl pills. He was booked in Snohomish County Jail for second-degree theft, residential burglary, and knowingly possessing fentanyl and meth. A judge set bail at $25,000. On Brian's Suit Show this morning, he and Greg were having a conversation about what's creepier, someone living above you in the attic or below you in the basement. And I can't remember what either of them said. I think they, well, because it's all just...
Wow, great way to recap the conversation.
But the reason I was recapping it is I started to think about what would be creepier. And I do know. At least Greg said basement is creepier to him. I don't agree with that. I think it's way creepier if you hear footsteps. You're not going to hear footsteps if they live below you.
Well, I think that's the point.
Yeah, but you wouldn't be more creeped out if you knew someone, you literally heard steps.
I mean, either way, it's creepy.
No. In the moment, if you just suddenly find out someone's been living in your home, I'm going to go with upstairs because you would hear it and that's how you would find out. And that's the creepy part. Below, you just find out because he pops out and walks out the door.
Yeah,
in my version, he walks
out. I feel like
it would
be creepier to hear the footsteps.
That's what I'm saying. You're not going to hear footsteps downstairs.
Well, yeah.
So then why are you disagreeing with me?
Well, I'm not. We're on the same page. We just got there.
Well, then why'd you say, but?
I don't know.
You were disagreeing with me.
I didn't realize how you were laying that out. It's definitely creepier to have the upstairs person.
Yes, that's what I am saying. I would be totally creeped out because first you do this. Did I just hear something? Did I just hear footsteps? And then you just kind of, you know, write it off. Then you hear it again. You're like, no, I definitely heard something. And you're like, is it the wind? And it's like hitting a branch that's hitting the roof. And it's okay. And then you definitely hear it a third time. And then you're freaked out. And no one wants to go upstairs. But it's not like you're going to call the cops at that point because then you'd sound like a big baby.
That's accurate.
So there's like no winning. And then someone has to go upstairs.
Does anybody?
And that's how they all die in the movies.
It's accurate. Does anybody live above you? Or you're not top floor, are you?
No. Someone lives above me.
Do you hear them, though?
No.
Oh, okay. So it'd be weird if you started hearing footsteps creaking.
Yeah. Again, this is the assumption is it's out of the norm to hear whatever noise the person upstairs would be making. How did he get in and out? How long was he living there, I wonder? Doesn't say in the story. I don't think they know.
Well, they didn't ask anybody anything the whole story, so.
Remind me in The Big Local to yell about how badly written stories are.
Today was a bad day for.
Am I wrong on that? Right?
No. Today it stood out quite a bit on several stories, several different networks.
It is a Friday, so I'm going to go off on a tangent. Brandi Cruz had a series of tweets while on vacation in New Zealand that I gave her a hard time for tweeting about, but something set her off. It was one tweet by a Como reporter who basically provided PR service for Jay Inslee. He's sternly taking a stand against homelessness. And it was just a reflection of not knowing the state, the area, the issues. It was a reporter who I think is fairly new to the region. And she was talking about how badly reporters have been working because we have a lot of young people who are ideological and we have a lot of people who are new to the region who have no clue what's going on, what the context is. And so they'll get a press release from some politician, just assume, oh, they're acting in good faith. This definitely isn't about supporting their political agenda. I'm going to present this as truth. And it's just been causing really bad reporting, whether we're talking about packages or the written part of it. And then today I went over multiple stories and I've sent them to Max today multiple times saying, hey, am I crazy or are they missing a key part of this story in the print version? Then you go back and you look like, no, it's not there. And then sometimes I'll go into the package and force myself to watch the video associated with it to see if maybe they include it there. Sometimes they do include a piece of information that's critical and yet somehow doesn't appear in the written piece. Also, there's been this new move to basically transcribe the video report into the web article. And so for those of you who want to maybe play along at home, listen to any reporter live hit. They don't read a script usually, at least in the introduction, or they do, but it's based on a script that's very clearly read and not written. There are ways to talk that don't translate. I get halfway through most of these stories. I'm like, I'm pretty sure they just transcribed this. It doesn't make any sense. The way that this is, especially Deborah Horn stories, I think all of them are transcribed.
Well, you can obviously tell when it's Deborah Horn.
That's true. She's my favorite, though. I like her. Okay, push the button.
What's trending? National.
Janet Yellen is our Treasury Secretary, and I can't believe I'm going to say this. I might end up defending her a little bit, just a little tiny bit. She was asked some questions by Mark Amode. He is a Republican congressman from Nevada. And while I understand what he was trying to do, and I actually agree with his big picture, but tell me if you think this line of questioning and the answers are as controversial as they seem.
Well, it's extremely negative because the IRS...
I should have set it up. She was asked why the IRS is considered by the American people as a scourge on the very existence of the U.S. government. Why do we hate the IRS so much?
Well, it's extremely negative because the IRS has been starved for resources. And so there are insufficient people.
I don't mean to cut you off, but I've got even less time than the ranking.
Yeah, you're wasting time now. Come on. Get into it.
You think it's resource related that they have.
Absolutely.
Have a bad reputation. It's nothing to do with historical culture in the agency or anything like that.
The agency has been resource starved, and it's not been able to invest in the kind of technology that makes it.
Is it your testimony that you think it's because of resource starvation that the IRS has a alleged reputation amongst taxpayers in this country? Is that your testimony? Is it because they were starved of resources in order to have a better reputation?
People know that if you call the IRS, the phone isn't answered, and it's difficult to do business with the IRS, and that reflects a shortage of resources.
She is 100% correct. That's not necessarily the main reason why people hate the IRS. No one likes paying taxes. You've got the people who pretend, I'm doing my civic duty and I'm paying my tax. I love it. Shut up.
Nerd.
No, you don't. You hate it. You want us to think you like it because you're a hero. That's the reason why everyone hates the IRS. However, they also have really, really bad customer service as far as picking up the phone. I told you earlier in the week, I thought I was getting audited because I got a big package from them or a fat envelope. And I'm like, oh, no. And I open it, and I was just randomly selected to prove that I was, in fact, the person who put in my tax filing. And so I called them, and I knew it was going to be a wait, right? You know, but you never know exactly how long. After going through what I felt like was 3 minutes of just listening to the automated messaging and telling you, you can also go online if you want to do it this way, finally got there. It says, your wait is going to be 30 minutes. I was like, oh, my God. But I got there early in the office on that day. I think it was Monday when I did it, or maybe Tuesday. And I called it. I put it on the speaker as I was doing other work. 30 minutes came and went. Then 35 minutes. And then 40 minutes. And then 45 minutes, which is exactly when I had a meeting with Brian Suits, who walked into my office, and I said, give me just a cut. And then right then, she picked up. So I kicked him out of my office. And then I worked with her. She put me on hold. Wait another 5 minutes. Like, that was a horrible imposition just to prove that I did what I did, which was file my own tax return or had someone file it on my behalf. It was just absurd. And so I do think that anyone who has to have any contact with the IRS probably also has a negative feeling towards them because of the perception of poor customer service, which, to Janet Yellen's point, yeah, they don't have enough people answering the phones. Now, they have a lot of people who will come collecting taxes that you owe. They've invested in that. And that's the real reason why a lot of people are upset. But they're also upset with the point that she made. I think that part was fair. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Don't forget, 4:45, we allow you to pick the news. Story number one, Biden is annoyed at Kamala Harris for not rising to the occasion. Plus, TSA declares peanut butter a liquid. Social media reacts. Which story do you want me to cover? Text 1-800-465-8770. It's The Jason Rantz Show.
Regular business hours.
Sammamish, Kent, Olympia, Everett.
This is The Big Local on The Jason Rantz Show.
Centralia, Lakewood.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for The Big Local. Brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services, online at alpineclean.com. It's the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle, and instead, we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. We start in Shoreline. I will give you the story, then I will critique the story. Got it? I will give you the story, then I shall critique it. Shoreline Community College got hit with a ransomware attack. Some students are wondering, what did they get? What information was exposed? Now, as a result of what happened there, and apparently happened on Monday, they still don't have a website up. Their Wi-Fi has been taken offline. Students and staff have had to go back to remote learning. Now, the only thing that seems to not be down is the payroll system, which leads me to believe it was an instructor. The college issued a statement yesterday acknowledging what happened. Immediately upon detecting the incident, Shoreline's IT team took steps to contain the incident and engage industry-leading third-party cybersecurity experts to help the investigation and restoration processes. Now, we don't know what they're asking for. Typically, they basically say, give us a lot of money in Bitcoin or something, and we will give you back access to your accounts. Officials have yet to confirm what data was potentially breached, but doesn't mean students aren't freaked out.
I was kind of nervous about it, just passwords and, you know, what type of things they might be seeing, what information they're getting from what they took from our school. So I'm trying to change all my passwords right now.
I mean this with all due respect. What low-rent hacker is going after Shoreline Community College? Why not go after a private school?
Because they figure the private school would have good cybersecurity.
None of them have good cybersecurity. We're breaking into government agencies or government systems. They can go after Gonzaga. I mean, don't go after Gonzaga, but you know, go after Gonzaga.
But I feel like it's easy to go after Shoreline Community College.
Yeah, but what are you going to get? How much money could they have? And by the way, what information are you getting from these students? Every single one of them has a C grade. None of them can afford regular college, so it's not like you're taking a whole bunch of money from them. What are you getting? I'm you know. Again, I said that with all due respect. But what do you get? Are you going to steal their credit cards? They all have bad credit.
I understand your point.
So, I mean, you know, go to the private schools where you're going to get a certain kind of student, is all I'm saying. Paula is a parent. She spoke with Como TV to say she's annoyed with her kid, Katie, because she didn't tell her what had happened fast enough.
I wish Katie would have told me.
You don't have to throw your kid under the bus. You're already saying they go to Shoreline Community College. They're already feeling shame.
There was so much angst in that answer from that mom. That was so funny.
I wish Katie would have told me. Yes, it's very concerning. I mean, you know, we have all our financials there and a lot of information that is potentially a problem for us.
Yeah, and look, the truth is, joking aside, it's got to suck when you're trying to figure this sort of thing out. You know, anyone who's had their identity stolen or like checks stolen back in the day, credit cards, like it is a horrible feeling. And when you don't get a lot of information about what is actually, what potentially could have been taken, stolen, reviewed, you know, you go through the worst case scenario and then you're forced to change your credit card number, you got to call your bank. You got to be more proactive and just assume that pretty much everything was stolen or everything was accessed. And that's just a pain in the butt. No one wants to go through with that. So I do feel for them. I don't feel, however, for Denise Whitaker, who did this story. This is one of the most poorly done reports I've ever seen. I had to go through three, and in fairness to her, although she did one horrible one yesterday, I had to go to three different sources just to get an understanding of what happened. Other than the title, they don't really tell you in this story that it was a ransomware attack. Even in the title, they don't say ransom, but they say cyber attack. This is how they start the story. Told you I'm in a mood. There's great concern over personal information being exposed in what appears to be a recent ransomware attack on Shoreline Community College. That sentence is so convoluted and unnecessarily long. First of all, they said that there was a cyber attack. What appears to be a cyber attack. There's great concern after just say there was a cyber attack leading kids to wonder whether or not their information was stolen. The college emailed students and staff on Monday announcing the attack. Now, at that point, you would expect to get some information on what happened, correct? She's clearly serving it up.
Yeah.
Michael Christofferson contacted Como News about the attack and expressed his family's concerns over private medical and financial information being exposed. His daughter is a student at Shoreline Community College. Christofferson said he immediately changed all of his banking passwords. It doesn't tell you what happened. It doesn't ever tell you what happened. And then you scroll down and you try to get more information. Then it goes to a school communications director. Doesn't give a statement. It says, Kat Chiappa, the school's director of communications and marketing, led Como News into the campus library to show how they're keeping anyone from accessing their network. What does that mean? To show how they're keeping anyone from accessing their... You mean to help prevent people from accessing the system? Or are they showing you how to break into their system and steal all their data?
But did you watch the video?
No.
They literally turned all the computer monitors in the library around and put literal physical locks on them.
Was this a case of a transcript of a written of a verbal story?
Has to be.
Led Como News into the campus library to show how they're keeping anyone from accessing their network. What the hell does that mean? I don't know what that means. So I'm going to close this story and we'll go to the next one.
This one's good,
oh,
right?
God. This one from Cairo 7. This is the title. And again, I say this all lovingly. I love everyone who works in local TV except for Steve Kiggins or Higgins, whatever his name is. Two Puyallup nurses save man's life after finding him lifeless hanging out of a car. That's the title. And they tell us that the nurses are heroes. Again, I'll tell you the story and then we'll critique. So, two nurses were driving in Puyallup when they saw a man and his fiance struggling. The fiance was helping this guy who looked like he was having some kind of medical emergency. Apparently, he was lifeless. And that's where nurse number one jumps in.
There was like a little car with a man that was half hanging out of the driver's seat and a woman who was administering mouth to mouth. I just threw my truck into park and left it running and ran over there. And Linda was right behind me.
Okay, thank you, Hero. So that's Jennifer. And of course, she's talking about her friend, Linda, another nurse. While someone called 911, the nurses, I'm told, according to the story, sprang into action, taking turns doing chest compressions.
Knowing that, like, we could be there during that time, because it did take about 10 minutes or so for them to get to us, that's a lot if you don't have somebody that's doing compressions.
Okay. Jeez. And we got it. First of all, you're throwing shade at the medics while also pumping yourself up. We got it. You're a hero. Here's more from Linda.
I'm glad we were there at the right time at the right place.
I just like keep thinking about the person and hoping that he's okay.
Okay. Is he okay? Because Cairo 7 TV doesn't tell us the condition.
It's called a cliffhanger.
Is it a cliffhanger? They don't even say at the end of the written story, we're going to find out if he's okay. Citing privacy, we could. No one said anything. No one told us in this story how the guy turned out. What if they killed him?
Well, the headline says saved man's life.
They don't say he was saved in the story.
I understand, but I assume he's not dead.
I'm assuming that too, but they don't say it. And what happened? They don't tell us.
Who knows?
Here's another piece of the story that just kind of annoyed me. An off-duty Federal Way officer. This is the one sentence in the story. An off-duty Federal Way officer also stepped in to help. So he did exactly what the nurses did? All the three of them took turns? Why did you not give him any love? What's up with that? You get one throwaway line at the end of the story? Why isn't he part of it? He was off duty. He decided out of the goodness of his heart he felt called to duty to actually help. He doesn't even get nothing. And those nurses, did they give him any love? If they did, they didn't include it in the story. So I'm going to assume they tried to take all the credit for themselves because nurses are heroes.
Obviously.
So dumb. Oh my God. We are getting an Amber Alert. Just as an FYI, we'll have those details when we come back. When we also come back, of course, it's time for the segment called You Pick the News. You get to choose which story I discuss. Story number one is Biden is annoyed at Kamala Harris for not rising to the occasion. Or story number two, TSA declares peanut butter a liquid and social media reacts. Which story would you like me to get into? And I did just read the Amber Alert as I was reading the stories. It's a kid who was abducted by an unknown vehicle. So that's not particularly helpful. But we do know that the name of the victim is Gianna, just 10 months old. The suspect is a 23-year-old named Reality Jordan. So the Amber Alert has been put out. The child was taken in Des Moines at about 6 a.m. this morning. They're in an unknown vehicle. The driver is unknown, they say, so it's possible that there's another person involved, possibly in Seattle or Portland. So if you have any information, call 911. In the meantime, you can vote by sending 1-800-465-8770 your answer. Story number one or story number two? 1-800-465-8770.
You pick the topic on the Jason Rance Show.
Indeed you do, and the vote was actually a tie. So we'll start with the story from Fox News that actually is based on a report out of Reuters, where Biden is apparently annoyed at Kamala Harris for not, quote unquote, rising to the occasion. Look, there are two types of people out there when it comes to Kamala Harris. Number one, it's the people who are honest and note that she does not know what she's doing, that she doesn't seem very capable. And if she's doing anything successful, if she's doing anything with any level of competency, she's doing it behind the scenes. In public, she is a disaster. That's group number one. Group number two are the people who pretend what I just said is not true. So they're people who are honest or they're people who are lying about her performance. Now, President Biden, according to the story, is reportedly frustrated as VP Kamala Harris for not rising to the occasion as a second in command. Now, they call this a bombshell story because it came from Reuters. This didn't come from a right-wing outlet. This came from Reuters. And it included comments from high-ranking officials in the Biden administration, some current, some past. One former Biden official told Reuters, if he didn't think she was capable, he would not have picked her. But it's a question of consistently rising to the occasion. A second former official said that there is a, quote unquote, point of tension between Biden and Harris. I don't think that the president sees her as somebody who takes anything off of his plate. He said, or she said, that Kamala Harris had a, quote, fear of messing up, and it caused her to become a little bit tardy when trying to take on some of these political battles. In particular, they pointed to the fact that she neglected the border issue. She was the border czar. She didn't go to the border until the very last second after, what, a year and a half of prodding, and she barely spent any time there. They note that the National Border Patrol Council grilled her for failing to do her job and protect the border in January. They wrote in a letter, if you were given a job 2 years ago with the explicit goal of reducing illegal immigration, and then you sit around and do nothing while illegal immigration explodes to levels never before seen, you should be fired and replaced, period. A current official said that she is weak on border issues. Quote, she, I think, is smart. That's a lie. She does not see this as a political win for her because it's not. It's a really hard issue. Oh, it's a hard issue. So hard. So does this come as a shock to anyone? Probably not. These are people who are working around Biden in this administration, regardless of their politics. They know the optics of Kamala Harris. They know the importance of optics. And when you've got a president who's 112 years old, who struggles to walk, and he's apparently going to run for re-election, there's going to be even greater scrutiny on Kamala Harris. And at the time that they ran, neither of them had a record as president or VP, except Biden technically had a VP, but that's not what they were looking at. They didn't know anything about Kamala Harris other than she dropped out of the race for president before the first caucus. But we knew why she was picked. Biden said why she was picked. But now she's got a record just like he does. And the voters are going to judge. And they're going to look at what either of them have done as an administration, as individuals. And when they look at Joe Biden, the people who maybe are okay with his performance, but they're wondering about his age, then they turn to the VP. Part of the reason why John McCain lost when he ran was he had Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin was seen as someone who was incapable of taking over the presidency. That was a huge problem for him, and he never overcame it. Yeah, he ran the campaign not particularly well. There were some problems. And he's the first to, he would have been the first to admit it, and he did. But it was a Sarah Palin issue. And to McCain's credit, he never threw her under the bus. And Biden isn't throwing her under the bus for Kamala Harris. But I don't know anyone who looks at Kamala Harris and says, oh, yeah, no, she's totally ready to become president. She clearly isn't. She very clearly isn't. The next story comes to us from Fox Business. It's one of those stories that gets you a little upset because they're just, TSA is trying to be cute rather than just be honest and open. They declared, the TSA declared that peanut butter is a liquid, meaning you're still subject to the rules when you bring on a plane peanut butter. It has to be in the, what is it, the 3.5 or 2.5 ounce container, whatever it is. So this whole issue started because some podcast host tried to bring peanut butter through airport security, and the TSA said, no, you can't do it. And he tried to figure out why is that. He just says no liquids, gels, or aerosols. And they said, you can't do it. It's a liquid. And it became sort of like a meme almost on Twitter, became a thing. And so the TSA, because they gotta be so cute, they tweeted out this week, you may not be nuts about it, but TSA considers your peanut butter a liquid. In carry-on, it needs to be 3.4 ounces or less. Make sure all your travel-size liquids fit into one quart-size bag. I have no doubt there's a reason why they're saying no to peanut butter. I imagine there's something of a similar consistency that can be used for a bomb, right? That's my guess. Why don't they just say we treat peanut butter as we would any liquid? It's not a liquid. It's clearly not a liquid, but we treat it that way because of the security concerns. They can't, because everyone's cute about redefining words. Sometimes they redefine words for political purposes, whether it's indoctrination or smears. And sometimes they just reinvent words because they think it's cute or they think you're dumb. And it's just going to be too much of a head scratcher for you to just say, no, we're going to treat it like liquid. But it's not a liquid. No, I know. That's why I'm saying we're going to treat it as if it were for the purpose of our security concerns. Why can't they just do that?
Well, who's trying to travel with that much peanut butter anyways? Who cares?
Well, if you've got a regular jar of peanut butter, it's going to be more than 3.4 ounces.
Why are you bringing a jar of peanut butter on any trip?
What if you bought peanut butter with maple syrup in it from Maine?
Okay.
That's it. Okay, you gave up really quickly.
Now, that'd be a good reason.
Just saying, people might want to buy it. I love peanut butter. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, we'll break down the ridiculous partisan Supreme Court ruling giving the thumbs up to the capital gains tax.